Jai Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha, Jaya Giridhara Dhari, Jaya Giridhara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Bana Chahari, Jaya Kunjabi Hari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama
Srila Prabhupada,
Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada,
Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta, Swamini Timamine, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Pashita Deshatama. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya, Naram Chaiva Narottamam, Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam, Tato Jaya Mudirayat, Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Today we are doing Canto 1, Chapter 13. The title of the chapter is Dhritarashtra Quits Home, Shloka 5 through 7. So we'll do number 5 responsively, and then we can chant the other two all together. Pratyu Jagmu Praharshena Pranam Tanva Ivagatam Abhisangam Yavitivat Parishwanga Vivadanai Pratyu Jagmu Praharshena Pranam Tanva Ivagatam Abhisangamya Vetivat Parishwanga Vivadanai. Pratyu Jagmu Praharshena Pranam Tanva Ivagatam Abhisangamya Vidivat Aishwanga Vivadanai. Akhichakmu Praharshena Pranam Tanva Ivagatam Abhisangamya Vidivat Aishwanga Vivadanai. Pratyu Jagmu Praharshena Pranam Tanva Ivagatam Abhisangamya Vidivat Vishanga Vivadanai. Translation, so we have a lot to cover and there's not a lot of time, so we'll just go fast. Translation, with great delight they all approached him as if life had returned to their bodies. They exchanged obeisances and welcomed each other with embraces. This is Vidura returning back to the palace of Hastinapur and embracing all his Kaurava relatives. Purport, in the absence of consciousness, the limbs of the body remain inactive, but when consciousness returns, the limbs and senses become active and existence itself becomes delightful. Vidura was so dear to the members of the Kaurava family that his long absence from the palace was comparable to inactivity. All of them were feeling acute separation from Vidura, and therefore his return to the palace was joyful to all. Let's do 6 all together. Muchu prema bashnaham rahata kantya katraha rajatam mahayam chakri. Due to anxieties and long separation, they all cried out of affection. King Yudhishthira then arranged to offer sitting accommodations and a reception. And 7 altogether. Tambuktavantam vishrantam asinam sukhamasane shantanto rajam mahatesham chashrimvatam. After Vidura ate sumptuously and took sufficient rest, he was comfortably seated. Then the king began to speak to him, and all who were present there listened. Purport. King Yudhishthira was expert in reception also, even in the case of his family members. Vidura was well received by all the family members by exchange of embraces and obeisances. After that, bathing and arrangements for a sumptuous dinner were made, and then he was given sufficient rest. After finishing his rest, he was offered a comfortable place to sit. And then the king began to talk about all happenings, both family and otherwise. That is the proper way to receive a beloved friend or even an enemy. According to Indian moral codes, even an enemy received at home should be so well received that he will not feel any fearful situation. An enemy is always afraid of his enemy, but this should not be so when he is received at home by his enemy. This means that a person who may receive at home should be treated as a relative. So what to speak of a family member like Vidura, who was a well-wisher for all the members of the family? Thus, Yudhishthira Maharaj began to speak in the presence of all the other members. Amagyana Timirandasya, Gananjana Shalakaya, Chakshu Unmilitamina, Tasmane Shri Vyayamaha. Panchakalpatirubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanubhya, Vaishnavibhya Maharaja. Requesting the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas and all the Vaishnavas that I can say something helpful just for today. So here we have a class on our purport on welcoming guests, proper Vedic customs. And we've heard many classes about that, so it's just another reinforcement of that. And it's saying how Yudhishthira was expert in reception, so he knew how to receive a guest properly. So here we see proper etiquette combined with deep affection among the Vaishnavas. So it's not just etiquette, but also genuine appreciation and genuine affection, right? It's not just like superficial acting in the Vedic way. There's also, you know, the heart is there and there's deep affection and deep love among the Vaishnavas. You can also briefly mention here the six loving exchanges among the devotees is how the devotees deal with one another. And the six loving exchanges are the giving of receiving of three different things. Can anybody say what they are? The six loving exchanges between devotees? Somebody just shout it out. Gifts, yes. Revealing one's mind and prasadam. Wait, he just said that. Mm-hmm. So gifts, prasadam, and revealing one's mind and receiving confidences. Mm-hmm. So it's appropriate to mention here when dealing with etiquette between two Vaishnavas, right? And it's not just etiquette, it's deep affection and deep love. We can also see this welcoming, this Maharaj Yudhishthira was expert in receiving guests. We can also see it in terms of how we receive newcomers when they come, or guests, right? That will make a big, big impression on if they become, you know, if they take to devotional service or not, feeling welcomed and feeling, you know, validated and accepted will go a long way towards them making them feel inclined to take to the process. Isn't it correct? Each one of us, when we came, if there was somebody who made us feel welcome and made us feel good, it produced good impressions in the mind. So it's very, very important, this welcoming function. And we should always keep it in mind. It's also important. Devotional service is the highest gift that we can give to anybody, to a jiva, a living entity, right? So we can think of it in the context of like we're giving them the highest gift and the highest thing, right? And also many, many people are looking for that, right? Because it's just a function of the heart and the soul that they are looking for the thing that is their constitutional position, right? And also they've been through the material world, they've experienced many pains in the material world, and so they are searching for that. Prabhupada says the living entity is wandering life after life in various universes looking for this relationship but finding only suffering. So the living entity is wandering life after life. He's looking for this. He's finding only suffering. So when he does finally come in contact with the devotees in devotional service, we should keep in mind, you know, how important, but like the important thing that we're trying to give them. And I think Divyananda Prabhu is like pretty expert at that. Right? You're just giving the jiva soul the highest gift. So there was one really sad story. It was a true story that happened in the early 1990s. Maybe you have heard of it. It just goes to speak about how the jiva is looking for this relationship with Krishna. And he's looking for that spiritual happiness, but he often looks for them in the wrong places because he hasn't come in contact with devotional service. So have you ever heard of the story about Chris McCandless in the early 90s? He was a college graduate, and he was very idealistic. He was a very bright young man. He was very idealistic, and he was looking for the ultimate truth. Like, that was his whole thing. He was looking for that. It was like his catchphrase. And after graduation, he was very disenchanted with the material world. So we can see he had all the right feelings, right? He was disenchanted with the material world. He didn't understand modern society. He hated it. He hated the way people treated each other and the way they stepped on each other. He didn't like his dysfunctional family, So he had all the sentiments of a ripe mango and looking for the ultimate truth. But unfortunately, the way he went about it was tragic. So he decided to give up all society, what's the word, society, he decided to give up his family, but also anything having to do with modern society. So he tore up his social security card and his license. He had $25,000 in savings and he gave it all away. He burnt his cash, he got rid of his car. All this could have been dovetailed in devotional service. So he got rid of everything, and he was basically hitchhiking for 2 years throughout the U.S., just kind of picking up little work here and there just to get him by to go to the next destination. And so he was doing that for 2 years, and ultimately he had the idea that the ultimate freedom would be if he went to live in the wilderness of Alaska, and just with nothing, and just live off the land. So this was his idea of ultimate freedom. Which, isn't a bad idea. Many people do that. They go to Alaska for that reason. And many of them are able to do it successfully because they do it in an intelligent way, right? They build a log cabin and they know how to survive in that way. But unfortunately, the way he did it was just, very overly idealistic and sort of tragic. And they found, they found his diary. Well, I'll tell you what happened, but they found his diary later on. Basically, he died, and his sentiments were very, very devotional. He was looking to find the ultimate truth above all. He was looking to find the ultimate freedom, and he was looking to finally kill that false self inside. This was all in his diary. It was very philosophical. But unfortunately he went to the wilderness of Alaska. He didn't go to somewhere reasonable. And I've been to Alaska, and it's very, very beautiful. And along the coast it's kind of civilized, but it's still remote. It's beautiful, but it's extremely remote and extremely vast, and sort of the modes are very harsh. So along the coast, it's reasonable. There's still people around, and you can make it work. And a lot of people do live off the land, and they have their own log cabin. But unfortunately, he chose to go to the interior of Alaska, which is the wilderness, by Mount Denali and west of the Yukon. And he was able to. All he had with him was a shotgun, a bag of rice, and a sleeping bag, and his journal and his camera, basically. And he found this abandoned bus in the wilderness, and I guess he survived for about 3 months, which isn't bad. He was just hunting and gathering. But then eventually he just died of starvation, because things can turn very quickly in Alaska. The weather can turn, and the animals to hunt disappeared, and he ate some poisonous plants. Basically he was very unprepared and overly idealistic. And they found him, some moose hunter found him, dead in a sleeping bag, 2 weeks after he died. But he was able to survive for about 3 months. You know, they found his diary, and you know, it's very sad. You know, at first he was very excited and happy. I found the ultimate freedom. I found what I was looking for. And then as things got like increasingly difficult in the wilderness, you know, his diaries became more like sober and, you know, just realizing he wasn't able to actually get out of there. At one point he said, "I'm too weak to hike out of here. All the game is gone. There's nothing to hunt. And the river is like too big." He was able to cross it before, but he wasn't able to cross it like going back. So he was too weak to hike out of there. So basically he was stuck. And he basically like starved to death. In one of his final journal diaries was, it said like, "True happiness can only be found through relationships." And so he had that deep and unfortunate realization too late. Happiness can only be found through relationships. Not to go off by yourself and live in the wilderness unprepared. And also, you know, this is a very tragic and large example of somebody looking for the ultimate truth and looking for something higher, but unfortunately going about it the wrong way. And unfortunately it having like a really bad ending. And he was very bright and very idealistic, but that is what happened, unfortunately. So we have to keep in mind that the jiva souls are miserable out there, and they are looking. And, you know, if we can give them the highest welfare, and also to make them feel like accepted, and to give them our friendship and our attention and our genuine feelings, you know, not just like, "Here's a book," and like throw a book at them. You know, it'll go a long way for them to take up Krishna consciousness. Did you want to share something about, like, people receiving knowledge and, you know, just being like, "This is what I was looking for"? And
Jai Sri Devi, thank you. This one guy, I go to the store in Gainesville to buy incense. And every time I go in any store, I bring some books with me. And, you know, I give them to people and say this on yoga meditation, talks about how to get free from stress. And I do that all the time. And most of the time, I don't get any response. But there's this really nice guy who works in that store. And when I walk in the store, he goes, "Hey, did you bring me another book?" And so the last time I went, I've been giving him small books. I gave him the cookbook, and I gave him yoga books, little paperbacks. And then I took him the Bhagavad Gita. And he grabbed the Gita and he holds it up. I took a picture of him and I put it on the post. And he holds it up to his coworkers. He goes, "This guy always brings me these books." And he looks at me and he goes, "You know I read these books." So we chanted the mantra together, and he was just, I mean, the guy was just so happy, you know. He came to life just because I took the time to walk into the store and give him a book. And that happens all the time. There's another shop that sells incense. I'm always looking for incense because I can't stand the toxic, nasty crap incense that people use. So you have to really search around to find it. And this other guy owns a head shop, and he's got some incense in there. So when I went in there, I gave him the chant and be happy. Next time I went in, he goes, "I've been waiting for you." And he holds up the chant and be happy. He goes, "I was reading this in the bar." And he said, people were coming up to me and saying, "Hey, what are you reading?" Because they could see the Beatles on the cover. And he said he sat in that bar and he shared that book with so many people and they were all talking about it. He said it was really, and that was all I did, was buy some incense and say, "Here's a book." And that's all I did, is give them the book.
And you made a personal connection.
Yeah, and I was friendly. And these people, when I see these people, they love me. You know, it's like nobody comes in and gives you something different like that. And it's a habit of mine that wherever I go, whenever I do, I hand somebody a book just because I don't know, I feel sorry for them. And I know Prabhupada's order. So, yeah, and it works.
Well, so the jiva is looking for this information, well, wandering universe to universe.
It's funny, we went in the store yesterday. Roddy was, you know, because we came to the temple, she was tealak and devotional, and she goes, "I don't know why, but I always feel uncomfortable walking somewhere dressed like this." I was like, "Get out of here, you look great, it's colorful, it's nice." And she goes, "I don't want anybody looking at me." So we go through the store, and we get what we need, and we come out, and we get the checkout, and the lady at the checkout says, "You're so beautiful. What a pretty dress." And so Roddy goes, and she goes, "What is it?" And Roddy says, "Well, it's a lark, whatever they call those things." And she said, "We just came from the temple. That's why I'm dressed this way." And then I pulled out a book and said, "Here's a book." And the lady was so happy.
It usually has a positive effect.
Well, I just told Roddy, I said, "Just see, Krishna's teaching you. Not only is it not weird to be dressed like a devotee, but people are immediately attracted." And this lady said, "Wow, you know, I love this."
Yes, I also.
And I gave her the book. And I said, "See, Roddy, see how easy this is."
Thank you. You have to make that personal connection with them and just sort of like accept them. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Like the Jewish relationship. Before reading, he goes out to the middle of nowhere to die.
Right. Right. He didn't have to go through all that. Right. Yeah. Just one sec. Wait a minute. Wait, we can have an interactive class. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
The grizzlies. Yeah. I don't know which one is stupider.
My question is that you're talking about this young man. He was so sincere, and he knew what he was looking for, and such a sad ending. Why is that Krishna didn't direct him to a devotee or to a spiritual path? Why is that?
That's a nice question. You know, the answer could be many, many different things. So we can only speculate. You know, you have to have some sort of adhikar, some sort of pious credits to be able to meet the devotees and meet a guru. So, you know, we don't know where that is with him, where that was with him. You know, but I'm sure also, like, through that suffering, you know, like Devendra Prabhu said, he had that realization at the end. You know, and he went through that suffering to sort of, like, arrive at that conclusion. So his life wasn't wasted in some sense, right? So, and we don't know what his next life will be. Maybe in the next life he will meet a devotee, because he did have a very sincere heart, and he was very good, actually, you know, like, the people he met along the way when he was hitchhiking, he was very good friends with them, and they all loved him, and, you know, he donated all his money to this, like, non-profit organization. So yeah, his heart was in the right place. Yeah, we can't speculate, but I'm sure that he did receive, he was benefited through that suffering, you know, and through that final, like, realization. Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, maybe he has heard the holy name, you know.
Next time, maybe.
Next time around, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think, yes, I believe so. I'd have to, like, double check on that, but sort of more like in an impersonal way, maybe. Like, I think he found God through nature. You know, but I believe there was some. I believe so, but I'll double check for you on that. So yeah, he was looking for broken glass, but he could have been given, like, a priceless gem. We can think there's many other, you know, people like that out there looking. Right? So we can have that idea in our head and that mentality. Sort of ending the class. I guess one quick section and we'll finish. So Vidura received spiritual knowledge from Maitreya, and then he returned, you know, to his life. He returned home. Well, eventually he left home, but I thought we could, like, try to explore how he received material knowledge, and then he, you know, and then how do we apply that material knowledge, like, when we return home,
And then how do we live in the material world applying the spiritual knowledge? So in the earlier shloka it says, while traveling on pilgrimage, Vidura received knowledge of the destination of the self from the great sage Maitreya and then returned to Hastinapur. He became as well versed in the subject as he desired. After asking various questions and becoming established in the transcendental loving service of Lord Krishna, Vidura retired from putting questions to Maitreya Muni. He retired from putting questions when he was convinced that Maitreya Rishi that the summum bonum of life is to be finally situated in the transcendental loving service to Krishna, or one who satisfies, or Govinda, one who satisfies her devotees in all respects. The conditioned soul, the living being in material existence, seeks happiness by employing his senses in the modes of materialism. But that cannot give him satisfaction, right? So we can think of the example of Chris McCandless. That cannot give him satisfaction. He then searches after the supreme truth by the empiric philosophic speculative method and intellectual feats. But if he does not find the ultimate goal, he again goes down to material activities and engages himself in various philanthropic and altruistic works, which all fail to give him satisfaction. So neither fruit of activities nor dry philosophical speculation, which I guess sort of what Chris was doing, like philosophical speculation, can give one satisfaction, because by nature a living being is the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And all the Vedic literatures give him direction towards that end. There are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification, and the other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his sleeping condition. And so I had one idea that we could discuss in light of the class. You know, so how do we receive this knowledge and then go to live in the material world while cultivating the knowledge? You know, how do we be in the world and cultivate our Krishna consciousness in a place that is geared towards like economic development and sense gratification, and sort of going against the grain of that, but at the same time, like, you know, not rejecting everything material and living in the world effectively. So I thought we could have a little bit of discussion about that, you know, especially also in light of like the Chris story, Chris McCandless. And I'll just start with one idea. Like Prabhupada said that the real Dharma is Vedic Dharma, but also while pursuing Krishna consciousness, we are to cultivate our own occupational duty according to our Varna. And that was the system created by me, Krishna says. And Prabhupada also says you cannot be in this material world without working. Right? And our tendency is that we do not want to work because we are part and parcel of Krishna and we are like Krishna. And Krishna doesn't have to work. So we also have that within us, like that we don't want to work. But Prabhupada says because we have fallen into this fallen condition, we have to work. It's interesting, right? So we're in a fallen condition and therefore we have to work in this material world. So therefore, while working, our dharma is to nullify this fallen condition and receive relief from these tribulations, for this hard struggle for existence. Therefore, endeavor to get out of this place of the hard struggle for existence. So did anybody have any thoughts about that? About how to, you know, be devotional and live in the world. And Prabhupada says, well, we have to work according to our occupation. And also because we are in a fallen condition, and therefore, like, we have to work. We cannot not work like Krishna. Not yet. Not until we get to the spiritual world. So did anybody want to, you know, say something about that? Prangavinda Prabhu?
I think in third chapter, Krishna says in the beginning that soul is by nature active. So when Prabhupada writes work, he doesn't mean like non-active. I mean active in that sense. But what I understand karma means is not an absence of action, absence of devotion. So what Prabhupada so long I have a desire to enjoy the action and the result of action by myself without God, that is devotion. Devotion is something also not an absence of action, but an absence of Chastarupa and Bhavarupa. This is Bhavarupa means they have intention. They are fully two explanations given in that. Pratikul Bhavarahita. Just like a Chanura Mustika, they were wrestling with Krishna. And they were punching Krishna. It seems like Krishna is backing. He was smiling. But they said this is not actually bhakti because their action is not for pleasure of Krishna. Their action is to kill Krishna. So that's why it is not bhakti. So bhakti is not a inaction. Bhakti is action, but it is out of love. So it is not a labor of this world. Labor of this world is the same. That is the identity of the body. But the soul, thank you. Arjuna was confused, not that he doesn't want to act. He was confused that I should protect my family. But then as a... That's another part. No, that's another part. But there were the two questions. Another part was, Rava Jana Kuntam, Vipra Jana Karana. But you are born to act. You will be forced to act. You are compelled to act. Whether you like or not doesn't matter. You are compelled to act. So Arjuna is saying that, okay, I am born as a scorpion, as a fighter. I am going to fight. Fight with who? Aggressor. He said so that you are elaboration on the six types of aggressors. Deadly weapon, signal drive, fire in the house. So Arjuna says, which one I should do? Krishna says, none. Don't do as a functional or fundamental. Do it for me. You are a soul. You are not a Kshatriya. You are not a descendant of this. This is a bodily identity. So you, your fundamental identity is you belong to me, your soul. So when you function on that platform, then you can accommodate the functional identity, like he's a Scorpio. So he was still fighting, it's not like he gave up fighting, but he was not fighting for Scorpio Dharma. He was fighting for Krishna.
Thank you. That's
very it was nourishing.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
Thank you for nice class. Thank you for nice comment. So, related comment or reflection on your thing is that in the society, Vedic society, there used to be ratios. A village used to have 12 balutedar or 12 people who would do work. One would work with the wood, other would work with the iron, and so on and so forth. And so that was a very nice ratio. And another thing is, right now, because of COVID in India, everybody is speaking about number of doctors to the population ratio. And I was thinking it's equally important to have number of book distributors to population ratio. And then that guy who was alone, and he may have would have met a devotee distributing books to him. I think it's one, you need a doctor for body.
Wait, you're saying he's going to meet one in his next life, or is
no,
that what you're saying?
If there were more book distributors.
If there were more devotees distributing books he could have met.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he traveled all over the U.S. actually before he went to. We know Asuka's also the U.S., but before he went to that part of the U.S.,
yeah
he met many people and he was traveling, so yeah.
Yeah, book distributors are like soul doctors.
That's nice. That's a nice idea, yeah. If there were more people distributing books, he could have been spared that fate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice class, nice comment.
Thank you. Anyone else?
But you know, one nice point, I heard this from Giriraj Maharaj. In the early 80s, during Gaur Purnima time, he used to come to Mayapur. So anyway, one time he was mentioning that he was making life member in Bombay. And